This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, I'm Sharad Kutan, with me, Uma Pagan, Ambika Pakin. And the morning run begins. It's a rapid descent into a very exciting day. Ascent.
Ascent. You said descent.
Did I say descent again?
It's a Friday.
It's the ascent of man.
The end of the week.
Okay, the descent. I think maybe I'm in that mood because of the news that Donald Trump has decided, and we've been waiting for this decision for some time, to pull the U.S. out of the 2015 Paris climate talks.
Well, we spoke about this yesterday, Sharad, and it hadn't been announced yet. But of course, when we spoke about it yesterday at 6 a.m., all the sources were saying that the U.S. was set to pull out. It's now official. This is not good.
No, it's not good news, but actually it's a complicated one because if you heard some of the responses, because there have been a lot of, he's got his supporters, right?
Of course.
His vice president, the president of the Coal Association, or the, let me pull out that name. It's a long acronym. It's the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. They're really behind Donald Trump on this.
I'm sorry, I'm just going to go back to the fact that there's no such thing as clean coal, but carry on. But,
okay, so then because, you know, if you heard yesterday, Jean-Claude Juncker, the president of the EU Commission, came out and said, well, you know, we've tried to explain to Donald Trump that actually pulling out is not as easy as he thinks it is. It's going to take 3 to 4 years to legally pull out
Correct.
Of the pact. And so this is a really a complicated thing, but perhaps playing to a domestic audience, especially those climate deniers, those on the alternative right, those, and I believe there's even one American politician with whose religious convictions, I believe he's a Christian, says that, you know, climate change doesn't matter because
if it did, God will sort it out.
Yes, that's right. And so you have those people that he's that part of the gallery that he's playing to. Unfortunately for the world, the U.S. is the largest greenhouse emitter of greenhouse gases, second only to, ahead of China. But that is really what's going to be shaping the world.
But here's the thing, which I think Donald Trump maybe fails to grasp or intentionally does it in this way, which is just because you've won and come into power, politics is about compromise. It's not about just, okay, now it's my turn. I'm just going to do what my people want, right? He's got to represent the country as a whole, not just the 40-odd percent who voted for him.
Yeah, and also, I think once you actually get into that position, there is this larger question of stewardship for the world.
Exactly.
Which is something I think with his America First rhetoric, he really wants to withdraw from.
Because he's slowly trying to dismantle all of President Obama's policies. I mean, the climate change one is one. The other thing they were talking about is he might get out of the whole Cuba agreement as well. I mean, that's something that the White House has been dropping hints to. I mean, we don't know where that's going to go. And so it seems almost rooted in a sense of vindictiveness against the Democrats that he's doing all of this.
Yeah, I mean, so what is it for a politician to only have that vision, which is I'm going to pull the rug from under what the other guy, my predecessor did? I mean, is that real vision? And for those in Malaysia who believe that Donald Trump is, you know, God's gift to the world.
And there are quite a few of them.
In fact, quite a few of them. I think they should pause to see what are the real, lasting consequences of a Trump presidency in terms of its policies. I mean, for the world, I mean, for us halfway around the globe. We have all kinds of good stuff coming up, especially, and I say that without any hint of immodesty, I'm on the grill this morning with Pankaj Mishra, author of an incredibly interesting book called The Age of Anger, which he tries to explain some of the kind of political passions that are inflaming the world, including those on the alternative right in America.
He is brilliant.
So all that coming up on BFM on the morning run. Now we have Paul McCartney and Band on the Run, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Band on the Run by Paul McCartney. Uma and Sharad with you for the rest of the morning. Well, some part of the morning at least. Uma, you're
going to
be here.
A little bit of it.
Yeah, till about 7. Now, you know, there are a lot of magazines out there and, you know, websites and news organizations that, you know, have these flash alerts about your health. And one of them, you know, and I think a popular one, because it seems to come up over and over again, is how to live long and healthy.
Yes.
And apparently, there's a two-word solution to this conundrum, and it's not the fountain of youth, which is, well, two words, I guess. It's actually eat less.
Yes, it is eat less.
But you know what, Uma?
But permanently.
Yes. Is it permanent?
Yes. Permanently cutting calories, essentially.
So you have to be slightly undernourished. And, you know, I remember reading something about experiments with mice and how being undernourished, which is mean as opposed to being overly nourished, meaning you take too much. You can even like too much good food, for instance.
Well, which is pretty much our constant state right now. Because we live in an age of opulence, right? And even not just in America and England, even in Malaysia, where
obesity is on the rise.
We're the most obese nation in Southeast Asia.
Yeah, and you know, I speak with humility. I'm not about to cast a stone on this question. I mean, I'm not going to even lose a stone, which I should actually. I should be losing a stone. But so many years ago, I read something of this sort, and it says, well, okay, so you be undernourished. The only downside to this is that you will feel slightly queasy and nauseous. Now, the question is, you know, quality of life. So living long, living healthy is about, at least living healthy is about quality of life. But, you know, what if the kinds of measures that you have to take also then sort of pull the rug from under that quality of life issue?
Yeah. So, I mean, okay, so maybe undernourishment may be too much of a stretch for a lot of us, right? But let's just stop with the overeating, I guess. That's one way of doing it. I mean, so
most, looking both our waistlines and thinking, how come
that we are boldly making these statements on radio where no one can see us? No. So here's the thing. A lot of doctors will tell you that most of your everyday chronic diseases, right, the diabetes and all of these things, can be controlled merely by diet and by losing weight. So a lot of the time, we're just completely overweight. Our waistline is too big. Heart disease is directly related to your waistline as well. And yeah, so I think one step, instead of going so far as to being undernourished, is to actually just stop overeating. And that's something we find very difficult to do.
You know, Umar, I brought to work this morning green apples.
Yes, I saw fresh your bag
coconut
of fruit.
And a watermelon. And you know what? I haven't touched it yet, but what I have had is the 3-in-1 coffee and crackers. So I'm one of those
intent,
people.
Sharad, perhaps, intent, Sharad.
Yeah, I mean, so my intentions are good.
Yes,
you know?
They are.
But there seems to be a gap between the knowledge and the action, right? So right knowledge does not lead automatically to a right action. I think this is kind of a Buddhist precept or something.
Well, so here's the thing. I mean, you know, it's funny that we're talking about this now during Bulan Ramadan, right? Because when breakfast happens, we see every night there's a function. You know, those buffets are pretty packed and people are constantly eating. And I think this year, for the first time in many years, a lot of our ministers, I think Khairi Jamaluddin is one of them, who have come out and said, you know, why are there all of these events all the time? I think Khairi had tweeted saying, I'm a politician and I'm forced to go for these things. I understand the politics of it. But at the same time, maybe we should stop doing so many of these events and overindulging.
Yeah, that's one thing. But on the flip side, you can think of it as, you know, a communal celebration of a collective sacrifice. So, you know, everybody's doing it together. I mean, to the extent that you're part of the faith community. And you see that with Hindus or Christians, whatever, when they go through, I mean, Christians have Lent and, you know, and Hindus, maybe if they're fasting for Thai Pusam.
Correct.
Also, you know, it becomes a kind of collective thing. But I do think that, I mean, coming just back to the health of it, the health science of it, is what do you do when actually we don't lack information and good information about what to do? What we lack is the will to actually pull it off.
We lack the will, but on the most part, we also have access. That's what it is, right? I think for the first time in so many decades, a lot of us have access to food and an abundance of food. And so we feel like it's so easy to indulge. We can, on a whim, get any kind of food we want, especially for those of us, you know, if you're in the middle class, you're living in an urban area, there's often no thought that goes into what you can eat and how much you can eat.
Absolutely. And I think online shopping just makes it worse because you just, you know, it's so easy to click. Everything is so easy.
They just bring it to your door.
Everything. And, you know, once it gets past the door into your fridge and then out of the fridge into your mouth, it's good times. And this, in fact, is Aretha Franklin with Good Times BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. That was Aretha Franklin with Good Times. The good times that you get when you put some sugar in your mouth and something good and yummy. Isn't it? I mean,
you're just talking about eating healthy and then you jump straight to sugar.
But, you know, but that's the problem, right? You can't beat pleasure. How do you argue against pleasure? And I think this is the problem with our health campaigns.
It's a problem with everything, Sharad. I mean, like, not just health campaigns. Think about climate change. How do you expect people to change behavior, right, when all of that behavior is so pleasurable? I want the air conditioning to be super cold and then, you know, and then bundle myself up because it's nice and cozy. So how do you change that behavior?
I think with great difficulty. But the fact that, you know, something has actually been achieved is laudable. And the fact that now Donald Trump and his merry band of men want to undo all that, it's really quite frightening, I think, for the future, because already we were doing just about the bare minimum.
Yes, that's right. There's an interesting, I mean, another thing I wanted to talk about, this was a fun story in Reuters, right, about daughters and people who raise more daughters. This is a fun story because apparently raising more daughters encourages executives in the corporate world to hire more women, which in turn improves deals and fund performances. How crazy is that?
Oh, really? So, I mean, but then you don't have a choice. I mean, you either have a daughter or not, right? I mean, what does it mean to raise more daughters?
Well, I guess have more women. I mean, having daughters equals, you know, hiring more women, right? Yeah. I guess people have a certain amount of empathy when they do that.
Okay, so there's another part of this, and this goes back to our earlier discussion about living long and living healthy. Women actually live longer than men. Yeah, that's just almost a universal fact. Any stats you see on life expectancy in any country, women live longer than men. And I think there are complex reasons for that. But yeah, I mean, I think coming back to this Reuters story, and I'm going to tweet it out shortly, about empathy. What is it that, especially for men, and in a world dominated by men currently, and perhaps for the last couple of hundred years, what does it mean to kind of lack empathy? Why is it that men have grown up lacking empathy? And what is it that talking to their daughters or nurturing their daughters, educating their daughters, gives them they wouldn't have otherwise?
It's just a different point of view. I mean, it's the same argument for diversity, isn't it? When you have diversity in your workplace, it's not just you talking within your own bubble. You are exposed to new ideas and different experiences, and all of that can lead to innovation.
Right. So there's a positive aspect to this, that, you know, but are we saying that men are from Mars and women are from Venus? I mean, are we going to end up going back to the same stereotypes?
Maybe, but at the same time, I think we're just kind of lauding these differences as opposed to saying that they're a bad thing, right? So the Mars, Venus, you know, Pakistanis are from Jupiter.
<Are they? laughs>
You know, I don't know, Africans are from Saturn. You know, so that you build on that diversity, right?
Okay, let's embrace the Saturnalia. Actually, this band that's coming up, Red Hot Chili Peppers, exemplifies that. And this is Soul to Squeeze, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Wonder Stuff, of the Wonder Stuff with Don't Let Me Down Gently. I'm Sharad Kutin, because with me, Uma Pagan, Ambike Pagan. You might have heard him last night, Uma, that is.
On Talkback.
You know, on Talkback, and he's here this morning. You're probably thinking Uma works 24-7 at BFM. He kind of does, actually.
I'm just here.
Just here. You're just, he's like the furniture.
I sleep in a corner.
Oh, no, you never sleep. You don't lie. You never sleep. He just hangs upside down in one of the room closets.
I'm Batman.
Okay. Or a vampire. I don't know which one.
Well, so yesterday on Talkback, we had an interesting conversation based on something that the MP Wong Chen had said about people not having to work hashtag Dwokarja, if you will, right? And this was, of course, after civil service had asked the Prime Minister to allow them to set up businesses because, you know, according to general orders, civil servants are not allowed to what do a kerja, if you will. And, you know, even if you do, you have to declare that there's no conflicts of interest and all of that stuff, right? And so we thought we'd ask people about, you know, how they felt about this and whether they thought it was sustainable. Because obviously, if you start working two jobs and three jobs and four jobs sometimes, you don't have a life, you've got no time to spend with your family, other things, it takes its toll.
Yeah, and you might be distracted. I mean, you might not do any of those jobs
very
particularly well,
yes.
Right? And so you did a poll too, I believe, and I'm trying to look. Oh, there it is. It says, do you have to do a kerja to survive? And you had 28% saying sadly yes, 19% saying no way, and 53% saying it's looking likely, meaning they think that considering all things, the cost of living and their wages, they just might have to get it. That's half the people you polled.
Yeah. And then, and so here's the thing about the hashtag dua kerja or tiga kerja, if you will. It's different when you're doing something passionate, right? So therefore, there are a lot of people who have the drudgery of 9 to 5, and then maybe they have a baking business on the side because they really love baking, or, you know, they like writing, so they do copywriting on the side. I mean, that's a different thing. I mean, that's something they're using almost as a mental stimulant, right? Because they're pursuing their passions. Meanwhile, they're not very sure whether they can make a living out of it. So they go to the 9 to 5 to make sure they have a steady income. I'm talking about the people who don't have a choice. Mm-hmm. You know, who need this extra money, if not their family is going to have a tough time getting through a month.
You know, I often, because I take ride sharing, I mean, you do as well.
Now you're public transport.
Is that I talk to people. I say, you know, are you doing this full time? I have a standard list of questions, actually.
Which I ask all my Uber and Grab drivers. Same here. Yeah.
And so I was always surprised by the number of people who just work that extra bit, because the extra bit of income they're getting, and sometimes it's not even hitting the incentive packages available on these companies that they're working for, but they're doing it because they just need that extra thing. It covers this kopi money, or it covers that, but or it could be significant enough for their wage packet. And I said, don't you need to rest? And
exactly.
You know, I wonder about what happens if you have a city where everybody's so overworked, they're working all the time. What, there must be some give. Something must be sacrificed in this, isn't it?
But there's a lot of stuff. There are a lot of factors that people don't have a choice, right? You know,
I'm not blaming them.
Yes.
And in fact, in some ways, I salute them for working so hard. The question is, what happens when we don't have a system that protects, say, your right to rest? Because it's not just a right. I mean, it's not a question of legality. It's just a fundamental physiological need.
Exactly.
Right? Enough sleep, you know, enough sort of... Because it'll take a toll on your body. It'll take a toll on your relationships. It could take a toll on the fact of especially if you have a nurturing relationship, like with your children.
Children, of course.
So if children are neglected, that's going to double back and bite society in the derriere.
Yeah, well, we've got a little sample for you. So we had a caller by the name of Hafiz who called in, who was a civil servant, and we had a whole bunch of civil servants call in yesterday, actually. And one of the things we asked Hafiz was what the situation was like for civil servants. Here's what he had to say.
Yeah, I can assure you that government servants, they cannot relax. We actually work around the clock, and then it's actually quite hectic. And I was in private sector before this, and then when I got into the government sector, it's totally opposite from what I was doing in private sector. So it's been really busy, and then it's very demanding, but, you know, it's like you're serving the country.
We also asked him why stay in this job, the government service job, as opposed to working in a different industry, and here's what he had to say.
Well, good question, but I think it goes back to my family's expectation that, you know, it's not a good time for you to look for a new job now, and then you have to stay on with your job and then just, you know, move on until you find the right job for you.
Yeah, so there's also that consideration, right, that, you know, now's not a good time to go look for a job. You know, the other day, Sharad, I had a Uber driver or a Grab driver, this young guy, he was in his 20s, and I think he was working as a trainee at a government a linked company, right? And so the salary was really, really low. And I was asking him what his day was like. And he said, you know, I earn less than 2,000 as a trainee. And of course, it's not even enough to maintain the car which he needs to get to the job and all of that stuff from where he lives. So he finishes work at 5, and then he will work Uber and Grab until midnight.
Just so that he
can afford to pay the car loan and live, essentially.
Yeah, I know people who have the driving done before they get to work. So they do 3 hours
in
of driving
morning, right?
in the morning before, and they get me to work. So I'm very grateful for them. Hats off to all those brave young men and women working two or three jobs in the Klang Valley. We'll be back with more after this. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. I'm Sharad, and with me, of course, since 6 o'clock this morning, Uma Pagan, Ambika Packet, and just joining us, Tan Chung Han.
Good morning.
And good morning. And you have stories that will perhaps bring a tear to our eyes. We have the Trump pullout of the Paris Climate Agreement. We, of course, continue our discussions of the RHB Ambank merger, and also talks of, as it were, and also Malaysia on the Global Peace Index.
That's right. So when we look at the decision by President Donald Trump to pull the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Agreement, you know, we'll look at who's cheering the move, who's opposing to it, and very interestingly, you know, which country is set to lead this charge, you know, on a global stage when it comes to becoming more environmentally friendly?
This is funny, right? Like, at the moment, because of America's purported isolationism, all these other countries are trying to step up to the plate. Like, New Zealand's like, yes, TPP, we'll take charge. And everyone's taking charge of different aspects of global issues.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. And also, I think global corporate voices are coming up. We already have Elon Musk saying what he said, you know, just a couple of days ago. And Richard Branson's now come out and saying that he's very sad by what Donald Trump has done.
Yeah, so we look at it from the corporate level in terms of the response to this decision by Trump, and also again at the government level, because there's some interesting numbers behind one particular government, you know, again, in terms of bolstering their credentials as being the world's leader of, you know, trying to address climate change. Now, on the local front, yeah, we've got more details on that proposed merger. Sharad, yesterday you posed a question, you know, how would this kind of news really benefit the average man or woman on the street? So we will have a bit more of an idea now, you know, given that we've got more details, and we'll address that after 7:45 a.m. today.
And also because Bank Negara approved it late yesterday evening.
Yeah,
right?
And for the record, they approved the merger talks. We are still a long ways away from, you know, the merger actually happening.
And also, you know, considering kind of global carnage in many parts of the world, we have, because the, and just in our neighborhood, really, Marawi City, in southern Mindanao. Where's Malaysia on this global peace index?
Well, I wouldn't reveal that just yet, okay? But the global peace index
Every day, Han, is just such a tease.
That's what I get paid to do for this time of the morning. You know,
so keeping us on the edge of our seats.
And on the weekends as well, if the price is right. I don't know.
So this week alone, we had Malaysia on the global competitiveness index, or one of the many global competitiveness index. And this time, it's the Global Peace Index.
Yep, 163 countries ranked. Top of the list, Iceland. Bottom, Syria. No. I mean, no prizes for guessing that one. Now, where does Malaysia rank? Again, we'll find out in less than an hour from now.
Of course, also, just to wrap it up, Donald Trump takes America into that category where Syria and Nicaragua are on the abstaining from the Paris Climate Agreement. We'll have more. We're coming up, actually, to the news. But before that, we have Concrete Blonde and Joey, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.